Recently, I was made aware of research, I think in 2006, was conducted about brain activation when hearing one's own and others' names. That's so interesting. It says that our left hemisphere starts to fire when we hear our name. When somebody calls us our name, it's not the same. The brain does not answer in the same way when we hear another name. And to me, that was fantastic. I was like, yeah, that's very important to call people on their name. I'm really bad with the name. I don't remember names, and I have to make you to struggle. But I'm aware of this. But when I heard about this, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Because this study actually agrees with the Bible. Because there is a connection between our name and our identity. And while being part of a community, of a local church, that's great to come to the large meeting, this one, or small meeting, small group. But it's so important to have one-on-one relationship in the community, in the church. Jesus Christ called himself the Good Shepherd. You know, when you know the Ezekiel 34, then you make the connection why he said, I am the shepherd. Because Ezekiel 34 prophesied that a shepherd will come. And he said, I am that shepherd, and I am the good shepherd. And he said in John 10, verse 3, the sheep hear his voice, Jesus' voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them. That's awesome. It's not only at the end of the time when Jesus will present us to the Father and say, hey, let me introduce you so-and-so. And all the heaven like, wow. But he calls our names even now. He knows his own disciples by name. And he leads them in and out so they can live their life under his supervision. Because of the family business that we are in, the family is the church, the family business is either to make disciples or to be priests in this world. It's very important because we are called to make disciples, but it's so important to call them by name and to establish in a way their identity. It's very important. Every name means something. And if you think of your name and you know what is the meaning of your name, that's great. But not everyone knows, you know, my name means this and that. No. But interesting, Jesus called by name Lazarus. I don't know if you ever thought why he went there and in front of that cave, he said, Lazarus, come out. You know why? Because in that cave, there were more than one person dead, and the bones were there. If he would say, come out, all of them would come out. So Jesus was very specific, Lazarus, come out. And then Mary, when he was, remember when Jesus resurrected, he called her name, Mary. And then she went to gospel the apostles, telling them about the resurrection. He called Simon, and he said, Simon, from now on, your name is different. It's Peter. And he changed his identity. He's changed even his name, right? So there is a connection between calling the name, and when you hear somebody else, like, your brain is not working in the same way it works when somebody calls you. It's so personal, so intimate. So it is very important to develop one-on-one relationship in the church. For our identity in Christ and for our growth. This relationship is called mentorship. And today I would like to talk about this. We are in a huge series about sermons about how to grow together because we've been two churches and now we are united in one. We planted a new church, Crossroads, the one that we are in now. And it's very important to, from the beginning, to understand what God wants from us. And yes, He wants us to make disciples. Jesus did that, right? And he wants us to grow together in small groups. Jesus did that too. And then he also wants to have meaningful relationship one-on-one. Jesus did that too. But if we follow Jesus, we have to do the same thing. Okay? It's a legacy. If we have been done this for generations, we will not have a low level of biblical worldview. I looked into a survey, and it seems that 10% of boomers have a biblical worldview. Only 10%. 7% of Gen X have a biblical worldview. 6% of millennials have a biblical worldview. And 4% of Gen Z have a biblical worldview. That's not encouraging at all. It's like going down, 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 down. Well, how about the next generation? What's the name of the next generation? Alpha, right? What's the next generation? 1% or 0%? You know why? Because of you and because of me. I don't want to blame you now. It's like, oh, my, you know, I'm not coming to the church and they are blaming us for. No, think about this. If you and I would do this, these numbers would be higher. And by the way, according to the same study, today's young people are also, and quote unquote, right, loneliness of any generation. Loneliest, sorry. The study found that 60% saying that they feel very isolated. This is a trend that was exacerbated by the COVID crisis, right? And it seems that the new generation crave for generational authority. 79% of respondents agreed with the statement, I am more likely to listen to adults in my life if I know they care about me. You hear that? They want to know that you care. It is not like, I don't care, man. Just live your life as you wish. As a church dedicated to introducing Jesus Christ to the new generation, we should be alarmed by these stats. And we should do something about it. An entire generation waits for us to call their name, to help them to find that identity in Christ. But they look and they take their identity from the influencers of TikTok or YouTube or whatever is today. They want their growth to be facilitated, and we are here, spectators, looking how they choose other influencers in their lives. Is this right? No. No. That's why today I would like to emphasize the need in our church of one-on-one mentoring. And maybe you think, who am I to mentor? Look at me. You got to be kidding. It's not me. Mentoring is a process where the mentors actually invest their lives into the lives of the mentees. In a sense, the mentor is an influencer, is a friend, a model, a growth facilitator. And you have a legacy to give, to pass it on to the next generation. The Didache, I told you about that document in first, between the half of the first century and half of the second century. It was like a live document. Very interesting. You should read it if you have some time. We know because of this, they were, from this document, we know that the early church, they were living their faith together, always together. Today, we tend to be very individual. And by the way, I told you last Sunday that we live in a country that is very individualistic. And it's very easy for us to become like this. But this is not the church. The church is not individualistic, anything but individualistic. We are here as a community, as a family. And today we need more significant relationships that can develop during the Sunday morning service, during the small group, but also one-on-one during the week. This is the one way to raise a new generation for Jesus Christ. Tertullian, I don't know, could you give me the next slide? I think I have that. This is a very interesting quote. Maybe you've heard about something about this quote. Tertullian said, the seed of the church is the blood of the martyrs. Actually, he said this. The more we are mown down by you, the more we grow. And this is actually the actual quote. The blood of Christians is seed. Many of your writers, such as Cicero or Seneca, exhort their readers to bear pain and death bravely. And yet, and maybe you've heard about the Stoics, right? And yet their words do not find so many disciples as Christians do. Who teach not by word, but by what? That's practical example, by life. I want to invest my life in you. Would you like that too? It's so easy. But you need a little bit of courage. And maybe you think, who am I to do this? You are a special blend of things because of your experience in life. At some point of your life, you've been in a situation where another person was not, or nobody was in that situation, only you. And you are the only one who are able to mentor somebody because you've been there, done that. I'm talking about conflicts. How to resolve conflicts. Well, we have a lot of experience in conflicts, right? And it's good to tell the others, you know, about this. Let's say failures. How to build a business from scratch. I don't know. How to raise children and what are the problems doing this. How to fight unbelief. How to fight unbelief. Well, but I am a Christian, I believe. Yes, but each one of us at one point, we're like, what's going on? I don't know. And how you did that, how you fought with that will help the next generation. How about health challenges? How about death of someone dear? What did you do when you did that? What happened? What happened to you? You teach then by example. You invest your life in their life. Maybe you think you are just a commoner. You think, well, I cannot tell them anything. I'm a nobody. Okay, let's read Luke 22, 31, 34. Who wants to read for us, please? I'm not going to. So Luke 22, 31 to 34. Only a few verses. Who wants to read out loud these verses for us? Luke 22, 31 to 34. Anybody? Please. But
Simon Peter, listen. Satan has demanded permission to speak.
Okay, start it all over. Technology. Yeah, 31 to 34.
That your faith and confidence in me may not fail. And you, once you have turned back again to me, strengthen and support your brothers in the faith. And Peter said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Jesus said, 34, I say to you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will utterly deny three times that you know me.
Yeah. The disciples started to have a strife among themselves and the main idea in this conflict was who will replace Jesus when he will die, who will be the greatest. And Peter most probably was the one starting the dispute because we know he is part of the leaders group among the 12. And Jesus told him that Satan demanded to have all of them. When you see that you, it's actually plural you, not singular plural you, all of you sifted like the wheat. This is like in that story with Job, right? Remember? He was sifted too. What do you do when you sift wheat? Exactly. Could you, you take and shake it, right? Jesus said, Satan asked all of you to be shaken and all your faith will go down. And you will go down. But I prayed for you, Peter. Especially for you, Peter. I pray for you. I want you to stay strong. And by the way, after you fall, you will fall. But after you fall, you come back. I pray that you come back and strengthen all these disciples. Now, Jesus didn't stop Peter's fall. He could. He didn't. But he said, I'm praying for you afterwards. What to do with this? That's your experience, Peter. Who denied Jesus like Peter? Nobody. He was the only one, right? He started to curse. I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know what he said, but he cursed. Like really bad, you know, fisherman language. and then he fell. And then he came back. Now, who can help others but Peter? Because he was there. Paul is writing to the Corinthian church, is 2 Corinthians 1:6. If we are afflicted, it is for your comfort and salvation. And if we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings that we suffer. I suffer before, I comfort you because you are in the same type of sufferings. It looks like mentorship. I want to invest my life. I want to help you in your problems. Let me help. Peter did the same thing. Actually, in Jesus' vision, Peter's destiny was to return, and after this, to strengthen the brothers. The word there is a verb, an imperative. He's not a suggestion. You understand? Jesus didn't suggest Peter. Well, if you feel like. Would you like to? No. He said, you do it, man. You do it. And the verb is sterizo. And I'm not, you know, showing off. I'm just trying to give you the word because today we have the same word in English, steroids. You will strengthen. You are going to do it. It's a command. Peter had to make firm the brothers that they were not. They experienced the same problem with him, like him, going down. And you will take them up because you came back. You understand, Peter? I am praying for you. 1 and 2 Peter were written between 60 and 64 AD. In 64 AD, Peter died, crucified, remember, upside down. He said, I am not worthy to die like my Savior. And they crucified him. So he wrote these two letters to a church that was going through persecution and unjust suffering. Peter's advice was for them to continue to live for God. You are on the right path. Just go on. It was impossible for him to do this unless he did what he did in his life. These two letters are actually letters of a mentor, having a lot of mentees all over the Turkey today. They were under this pressure. He was under the pressure. The world is a hostile place for Christians, and they need to continue and to have the hope of glory. But he was the one who was down, really down. And now he knew how to speak with those who are in the persecution. Otherwise, they would say, what do you know, Peter? You have no idea. You walk with Jesus. You ate with Jesus. And now you are giving us advice about how to hold on. And no, he was there. He was there. And interesting, in 1 Peter 5:12, this is actually the reason why Peter is... He's stating his reason why I'm writing this to you. 1 Peter 5:12. By Silvanus, a faithful brother as I regard him, I have written briefly to you, exhorting and declaring that this is the true grace of God. Do you see the last words there? Stand firm in it. Stand firm. Stand firm. I didn't. But I'm back just to encourage you. Stand firm. Who am I to mentor? Well, you are the perfect person to do this. Nobody can do better than this, than you. Like Peter, you are so well prepared by your failures, by your experiences, by your decisions in life, your friendships, your connections, your education, your family, your church. You encourage others to stand firm. You can do this. I'm your biggest supporter. You understand what a mentor is? It's actually supporting others and letting them to stand on your shoulders. But to do this, you need to lower a little bit. That's humiliation, you know, to be humble. And then when they are ready to do this, you are strong and you let others, because they will do the same thing with the next generation. If we are not doing this, then who? Who? That's why it's imperative, like Peter, imperative. You have to do it, Peter. That's the job of a mentor. But then there is another question. What are we going to do with who we are? What are we going to do who we are? Some people will use their life to invest in others and some not. I'm telling you, that's the truth. I don't know how many from this congregation will choose this in the future to not doing it, but it's so bad. Because when you die, everything that you experience will die with you. You know what will remain in the future? What's the, like the legacy? Is what you have shared with others. Your life is like a toolbox. And that there are so many tools, and you can help others to fix their lives, but you take this toolbox and you bury it in the ground. And like, no, I don't want to do this. Oh, because, you know, and that's the very weird humility. Oh, I cannot do this. You know, it's who am I to do this? You are like Peter. You're like me. We are all the same. One day you will give an account to God for all you have kept for you. And believe me, God will judge you for this. He said, you went through this because I wanted you to help the next generation, but you didn't. You selfish, lazy servant. Maybe that rang a bell, huh? I took it from Matthew 25. Let's turn to Matthew 25, 14 to 30. Maybe you've heard that, you know, before, but that's why I'm like, okay. I'm not so smart, you know, to this and original, like, oh, you are. No, I took it from Jesus' words. Matthew 25, 14 to 30. Who wants to read for us? Matthew 25, 14 to 30. Anybody? We have here a courageous.
The parable of the bags of gold. Mm-hmm. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one, he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another one, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 bag went off, dug a
hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here it was. Here it what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have even what they have will be taken away from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Wow, that's sobering. A talent was a unit of weight in the ancient world. In Israel, the common talent used in the New Testament times was 58.9 kilograms. When it says a bag of gold was almost 59 kilos of gold. That's a lot. That's a lot. So the first servant received 294.5 kilograms of gold. The second one received 117.8 kilograms of gold. And the last one, 58.9 kilograms of gold. All this gold was the master's gold, not their own gold. Okay? The master's gold. They all received the gold according to their ability. The first traded the gold and after a long period of time brought back a plus value of 294.5 kilograms. The second, 117, and the third one brought no more than less value. It was not more, not less, exactly. He said, I dug a hole, I buried, now this is your money. This is your gold. He could employ others to do something for him. He could give it to the bankers. He did nothing. I don't know, maybe he despised. Well, it's so hard to say because this story is fictitious. Never happened. Jesus made it up just to emphasize one truth, and we need to find the truth in this. And the truth is this: God gives us opportunities. And some, they know how to maximize the opportunities. Some, they said, ooh, I don't know what to do. People like the one who buried the gold, interesting, they will go to hell. That's sobering. They think they are good servants of God, but they are not. God will judge their lives according to what they have done also. And what they have done shows something about their heart. If you read again what the servant said, what Jesus put in the mouth of that servant, these words show something about his heart. Not only about his actions, about his identity, not only about his performance, poor performance, and whoa, no, that's not fair. He's in hell now. No, it's about his identity, his heart. He was lazy and hesitating. He was afraid to act. Whoa, I don't know what to do. And you remember that those who are afraid and they are cowards, they will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. Read the book of Revelation. It's the same thing. It's all across the New Testament. No ambition for the master. He was reluctant to do anything because, oh, I don't know what to do. It's not for me. People like the one who buried this gold will go take all these opportunities and say, I don't need them. I found out that at the funeral of my niece, Raluca, that a lot of people, and even the non-believers, she was described like Jesus Christ from non-believers and believers. And I was like, wow. And then I found out something that I didn't know. It was only in that moment when I knew that. Remember, she had a metastatic pancreatic cancer, stage 4. And she said this, I'm in the hospital not for me, but for the kingdom's sake. I was like, who in the world is doing this? Only a conqueror can talk like this. Only a mentor. I am here not for me. I'm here for someone else. And she was a testimony in the hospital for 1 month. Do not bury your life. So many young people can benefit from it. So many people younger than you can benefit from the unique way your life was shaped by Jesus. Every failure, every decision, every experience, all of them qualifies you to be a mentor. And after a long period of time, that long period of time is your life. My life. After a long period of time, the master will come and say, what have you done with my opportunities? Take your opportunities. I don't need them. This is your gold, not mine. If you would give me some, maybe I would be more interested. And the master will say, you lazy. This is how it's to be a mentor. It's, yes, come to the big meeting. Encourage others. Yes, come to the small meeting, the small group, and grow with the community. But yes, ask few of the people that you know around. I want to invest my life. If you call me at 2 a.m., I will pick up the phone. I said, I'll come. You need me? I'll be there. You see, this is so important. We are not living our lives for us, but for the kingdom. And believe me, if God will say, you know, I don't need you anymore, come home, we'll gladly go home. But until then, oh my, we have so many things to do, right? And so many things to invest in others. How to do it? Well, I read, I listened a lot of videos on YouTube, and somebody came up with this 4 stages of mentoring. I love that. And stage 0 mentoring a seeker. Someone who is not a believer. Someone at school, someone at work. This person does not know the gospel. The goal is to develop a relationship that adds value to their life. Only that. It's like sharing some principles from your life and from the scripture. How to be a good dad, how to be authentic, how to grow your business from the book of Proverbs. It's so easy. You add value to their life, and it's impossible during this time. Then probably they will say, you know what? could you tell me about, you know, more about that Bible, because that's interesting. Can I come to with you at the church? Because I think you learn a lot of good things there. It's mentorship. Who we are, what we do, what we say. We add value to their life for success, for honesty, for integrity, character, love. All of these are from Jesus. They don't know, maybe, but we know. And that the impact that all of these had in your life, they will have also impact in their lives too. Biblical examples about on this. Well, Jethro, remember Jethro advised Moses on leadership and delegation. Or Naomi helped Ruth to understand the laws and customs of the land. It's easy. Stage one mentoring is mentoring a new believer. Like this person probably, they prayed the prayer. They said, yes, I want to be a disciple of Christ. But they have habits in their lives. They are new in faith. They don't know how to do things. They need somebody to show them the way. You talk with them how to pray. You tell them how to read the Bible and how to give and why and all of these good things, good habits, the habits of the kingdom, right? But you are in there. You know all of these things. They don't have to steal from us. We have to be ready to offer them this. I want this because I've learned that Jesus did the same thing. I want to do the same thing with you. Eli mentored Samuel to understand God's voice, right? Remember Barnabas? He mentored Paul, the huge genius of Christianity, was mentored by Barnabas. When he was a new believer, he took him and was like, come on, I want to teach you some good things. And he became who he is. Stage two mentoring is mentoring a follower of Jesus. This person is a solid believer, an honoring God person who just become a member of your church, and you can introduce what is your church about. That's a good mentorship. Help others to become good witnesses and how to witness to others and how to share your testimony, how to share the gospel. I don't know. How to be a full disciple, not 99% disciple, but 100% disciple. Yeah. Elijah helped Elisha to understand his call. Aquila and Prisca provided deeper understanding to Apollos. Older women teaching younger women, right? In Titus. It's so clear. Paul modeled for Timothy how to be committed to serve God. And actually, he also called his my son. He called him my son. It's this type of relationship. Spiritual parents. If you don't like the title mentor, spiritual parents, that's great. Be a spiritual parent. I have a long list of mentors. Paul mentored Titus, John Mark, Silas, Epaphroditus, Trophimus, I don't know if this is proper English, Sopater, Aristarchus, Secundus, Gaius Tychicus, a lot of young men. He mentored them. Stage three mentoring is to mentor another mentor, how to become a mentor. This is awesome. Moses taught Joshua leadership, and Joshua became the new leader of the nation. Jesus taught the apostles, and they taught others, and that's awesome. My conclusion is this: mentoring others around you shows clear signs of love. Clear signs of love. I love you, therefore I want to invest my life in you. I want to support you. I want to show you how I did it. And maybe you need another mentor, and please, there are so many others that they want to do this here in this church. Mentorship is different than discipleship. It's important to understand the profile, okay? The evangelists bring the gospel. The disciple maker makes disciples, but the mentor shares the life with another. some things are very close to them, like to each other, and they intersect. But think about this. If you want to invest your life, it's not about knowledge. You see, when we talk about evangelism or disciple maker, Jesus is the center and the person is revolving around Jesus or you as a disciple maker. But when we talk about mentorship, you revolve around the mentee. Make sense? Because you want to invest. And today's young people are, as I said in the beginning, loneliest of any generation. 60% say they are very isolated. Let's change that. We can. And actually, this is the vision of our church. Jesus called us to do this. I would like to finish my challenge to you by sharing with you the list of the mentors in my life. And you know what? What's next? I know it's 5 to 12. That's okay. We have enough time. We will get, I don't know if, should we get together in groups and share the mentors, the names of the mentors in our lives, or to do it publicly? I'm still, from the beginning of when I started to think about this, I'm struggling in me. Should we do this publicly or small groups? Small groups? Okay, you know, after sermons, we always have small groups, feedback groups. Let's do this, feedback groups. Like, you turn to the others and tell them few names of the mentors in your life, okay? Let's do this. I think it's good to honor their names. You stand on their shoulders. You are here because of them. Okay? Okay, mine. My father, my father-in-law, Marcel Galeziano, Buni Kokar, Talos Vasile, Preston Pierce, Doug Bugman, Alex Montoya, Douglas McDougall. These people poured. Not always. They didn't as a, come here, I want to take you, you know, as a mentor. Only few did that. But I've learned from them. And my life is richer now. I'm really rich because of these names. Good people in my life. I will never forget them.